We're starting a new recurring segment today on Current State. It's called the Public Poetry Announcement. We've partnered with the Center for Poetry here at MSU's Residential College in the Arts and Humanities to find the funniest, the darkest, the most heartwarming, even the most heartbreaking poetry out there. And please note, this is not the kind of stodgy poetry you learned in your high school English class that scared you away forever. But it's also not your neighbor's rhymes about sunsets and puppy dogs. The poetry we'll be featuring will be from among the greatest ever written. Now, moving forward, these PPAs, or public poetry announcements, will not be as random as you think. Through their subject matter, or their place in history, or the poet's biographical relevance, these poems will, we hope, add another dimension to the conversations we're already having here on Current State. Sometimes they'll come with a short background about the poet, or a little discussion about the poem, but at other times we'll just let the words speak for themselves. Now, to kick off our public poetry announcements, Current State producer Joe Lindstroth spoke with Stephanie Glazier, the acting director of the RCAH's Center for Poetry, about the often misunderstood art form and their first featured writer. This is Michigan poet Robert Hayden, who was the first Black poet laureate in U.S. history. The conversation began with a simple question. Why should anyone care about poetry?
Poetry is a wonderful way to belong to a community. I think that's the first thing I have to say about it. It gets people in rooms together. Even now, talking on the radio, this is sort of a way to be in community with people, right? It's a very finely wrought way to say the deepest part of ourselves, and that's a kind of sharing I think our culture often lacks.
You know, poetry has this reputation as being boring, hard to understand. I mean, I'm trying to hurry up because I think people are probably already looking to hit the preset button on their classic rock station with that word poetry.
Yeah.
You know, people think it's this old semantic gobbledygook.
The joy has been sapped out of it for a lot of people, Joe. That happens in high school a lot, right? We learn Edgar Allan Poe and then we're done, right? And we never look back. I understand that wholly. It's just that there's this entire world out there full of funny, contemporary, colloquial, casual poetry that is a joy.
So, I mean, is it where poetry starts being misunderstood is high school English
in the classroom?
Class,
I absolutely think so, yeah. In the American context, I would say. Abroad, it's much different. Abroad, they have poetry readings on street corners every Friday in Iraq. I have friends who live there. They tell me about that. I'm wildly jealous.
Wow, that's actually an incredible image.
Yeah.
You know, and I think maybe part of this stems from what we're talking about with the high school confusion. There's so many types of poetry. Verse, limericks, sonnets, haikus, these all seem to have rules, which I can wrap my head around. But then you get thrown at me this free verse, this free form, where it seems like, anything can be a poem, and the only requirement really is that the author says it is.
I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all. I think poetry serves the unserviceable. So form, we can think about it, if we want to take a sonnet, right? It has 14 lines. There are these rules. It has a particular rhyming pattern. You can put in a sonnet death, right? And when you have something that huge, something that large and difficult to deal with emotionally, it can be useful to have constraints as a writer. I can tell you that. It's good to be able to quantify things sometimes when they're that large a feeling. Free verse is absolutely about voice, I think, more than about sort of the formality of verse, that has sort of specific rules. Personality really can come through there.
So it is personality. I mean, that's what it sounds like. I mean, it's a choice. I think that's really interesting that you say the structure allows some freedom.
Absolutely.
With the poet
it can be freedom.
To take something as big as love or death and give it some frame, give it something to work with.
A way to think about it.
Right. But then on the other side, maybe another poet says, death is just too amorphous for me to fit into, a sonnet.
Yeah. And then we get somebody like Allen Ginsberg, who writes pages and pages and pages of meditations on things. It's different for everyone. But I think what's important for me, one of the things that's important to understand in coming to poetry as a newcomer to it, is that poets are informed by each other and by a lineage, right? They're not coming out of nowhere, not just anyone can write a good poem, I do want to say that, but it does take careful study. And people who have cultivated voices as poets are coming out of years of study, of a lineage, of other people's voices too.
See, I think people don't understand that it's almost like academia. If you're going to become an expert in a certain part of political science, for example, you need to understand the discussion.
The theory.
And everything that came before it, so you can find your little niche in that discussion.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. People sort of have this conception of poetry, I think because the material with which that art is made is the material we're using right now between you and I. It's language, right? We use it every day. We use it all the time. And it seems disposable, but it's not. It's really very sacred if you take the time to look at it and craft it.
Let's use an example here. You chose Robert Hayden the first poet we're going to discuss here. And tell us about him.
Robert Hayden is somebody I have a lot of respect for. I also wanted to start this conversation with you off with a Michigan poet. You asked me to think about economic hardship. And in this state at this moment, I think that makes a lot of sense. Hayden didn't grow up with a lot of money. He grew up in Detroit. He was black. He was nearly blind. He wore these great big Coke bottle glasses. He was terribly
nearsighted. So the photos you see of him,
nearsighted. Yes.
They magnify his eyes.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've heard stories of, when he taught at U of M, which he did for many years, he studied there as a student as well, he wouldn't drive, such was his vision, that he just took the bus around everywhere. And so his students would see him on the bus. And I love the thought of that.
Yeah, and he's a shorter man, if I understand, and
right.
He's pictured in bow ties and these big glasses.
Erudite.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And to see him on the city bus, that's an image.
Yeah, it is. He was also the first, what we know now as a poet laureate, but what was called then the consultant of the Library of Congress in poetry. So the name laureate came along a little later in history after Hayden's term. But he was the first African-American poet laureate or consultant
in 1976.
That's right. So he was a pretty incredible trailblazer in the way of poetry, in that he really refused to participate in people trying to pigeonhole his identity. He was a lot of things that people found interesting. He was an academic and a black one at a major institution in the United States at U of M. He was being taken seriously. He was a great poet. He was Baha'i, which is a faith that is not that well-known, I think, in larger American culture. And he just sort of constantly refused being labeled as any of those things. And he said that he was an American poet, and that was very important to him. And he said it and said it and said it until it was true.
But he came up against a lot of resistance.
Absolutely.
Especially in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was obviously the civil rights era, the black nationalism. Within the African-American community, I think, he was a bit ostracized for this stance.
Absolutely. He was operating in what was all but a white world. And he claimed it for his own. And he refused to accept any other narrative. He just refused them. And I'm so impressed by that tenacity.
So he has this sense of not wanting to be labeled anything other than American poet. But yet, ironically, he is well-schooled in history.
Very well-schooled. I mean, what's so beautiful about that sentiment to me is that he is so specifically himself. He was very deeply rooted in black history in this country, very well-versed in it, and was writing about that, writing of those poems.
Malcolm X,
absolutely.
Know, the slavery,
right.
Harriet Tubman.
But he was claiming them as an American narrative, not a black American narrative. They concern you too, reader, right? He wasn't letting anyone off the hook. And it was just such a powerful rhetorical movement on his part. It indicted us all in a way.
So what poem did you bring for us today?
I think this might be his most well-known poem. It's certainly my favorite of his, and it's called Those Winter Sundays. Sundays, too, my father got up early and put his clothes on in the blue-black cold. Then, with cracked hands that ached from labor in the weekday weather, made banked fires blaze. No one ever thanked him. I'd wake and hear the cold splintering, breaking. When the rooms were warm, he'd call, and slowly I would rise and dress, fearing the chronic angers of that house, speaking indifferently to him who had driven out the cold and polished my good shoes as well. What did I know? What did I know of love's austere and lonely offices?
Yeah, there's a lot packed into those 14 lines.
There's a lot packed in here. The thing that I like most about the poem, what I'm most attracted to about it, is its confessionalism, right? It's kind of a confession of his child self. He resented his father, but these labors of love, right? What did he know as a child of how much, in fact, he was sacrificing for his children?
You can almost get the sense that, you know, growing up, Robert never maybe even heard him say, "I love you."
Yeah. You don't get that impression. I mean, another thing I really love about the poem, Joe, is that it tells the whole story. It doesn't just say, "I'm grateful. I'm grateful now. I didn't know enough to be grateful then." It says, "I was afraid of him. The chronic angers of that house. He was afraid. Yeah. There was trouble there."
Yeah.
He says that too, right? He's telling a whole story. And that's what I mean when I say poetry serves the unserviceable. It's not just one thing. It's all of them, right? He's giving us his whole childhood here in a way, in this one morning.
In 14 lines.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It's talent. Yeah.
Well, I really thank you for joining us and for beginning this partnership with Poetry and Current State on the radio. Stephanie Glazer is the acting director of the Center for Poetry at Michigan State's Residential College in Arts and Humanities.
Thank you.
That was Current State producer Joe Lindstroth introducing our new recurring segment, Public Poetry Announcement. Listen for another PPA sometime next week.